I've always rather been inclined to, well, disregard it, to say the least. A context, in fact, it's only just lately that I've sort of felt that I might be inclined to come. I can appreciate people coming if they want very much to get into touch with some soul, some friend on earth, when they have something of importance to speak about, or perhaps to give some help or comfort to someone who's in dire distress. And of course I know there are certain souls who make a habit of coming regularly, who probably feel that they're able to give some knowledge appertaining to this new life. I suppose it all rather boils down to the individual as to whether they should come or not. Fortunately, we have free will. We don't have to come back unless we want to, or if we feel the need is urgent. I've rather been myself inclined to stay away from Earth. Couldn't quite see from my point of view what benefit could possibly be derived from it. Perhaps it is I'm a little selfish, inasmuch that I'm so content and so happy here, and I really have no real desire to make a connection or contact on Earth. There is no one now very near or dear to me, and the point of view of coming didn't strike me as being very, well, necessary. Anyway, out of curiosity, more than anything else, I've come to see what you look like on your side of life. And I must admit that considering I haven't been anywhere near the Earth for must be 50 years, I would say that speaking from my own personal point of view, I have no particular desire to come again. So much seems to have changed. Life seems to have become so fast. People seem now to have no time one for the other, and the tranquility and peacefulness of the countryside seems to have become disrupted by all these modern inventions which seem to evidently get you about very quickly, in the process of which you see nothing, or very little I should think, and at the same time seems to me that you have no real time to concern yourselves with the things that really matter. Everyone seems to be very unsettled. No one seems to be particularly satisfied or happy. And quite frankly, although I understand and it seems that the poorer classes have been certainly given a better way of life, at least they seem to have every modern convenience, and they seem to have every possible opportunity, which really, in a sense, makes them, I don't know, so vastly different from what I remember the poorer classes. Of course, I know there was dire poverty and distress, and I know that in many senses the poorer classes had a very rough time, and all that, you know, that is to the good. One wants to see progress in people, and it's nice to know that nowadays they do have more money in their pockets and more leisure and better housing, and indeed have made vast progress in certain respects anyway. At least they're now well fed and well looked after, and certainly seem to wash more often.
Friend, can you tell us something about yourself, your name, and what you're doing, your sphere you're on?
My name, I doubt very much will convey anything to you. I can't see any reason why it should know. My name was Isaac.
Isaac
Watson.
Isaac Watson, yes.
So that really wasn't my name. Watson was not the family name, but we changed it to Watson for reasons, family reasons. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're a Jewish family. And my father was in business, and indeed, I entered the business when I was 15, 16, and we were very successful. But my brothers, too, started various businesses. Actually, we were of Polish descent. My father came to England in his youth, in early 1800. But it's a long story. I'm sure you're not interested in our family history.
Were you brought up in strictly in the Jewish faith, Mr. Watson?
Oh, yes, I was brought up in the Jewish faith. But in my 30s, I wouldn't have said I had any religion particularly. I wasn't very keen. I wasn't very interested in religion as such. In fact, if anything, I think I became more or less what you term an atheist. I read a good deal, read various books on this subject, as a matter of fact, in the latter years of my life. I can't say that I was terribly impressed, although I was interested. There's such a lot of nonsense goes on, of course. That's another reason, I think, why I wasn't all that keen on coming back. There's so much nonsense goes on in this business of spiritualism. Besides, I didn't want to come back. As a matter of fact, I had enough of your world when I was there, one way and another. A very unsuccessful marriage. I wasn't a fit man. My health wasn't good. And I had a long illness. And I was very glad to leave your world altogether. I was perhaps not an easy person to get on with. And yet at the same time, I think that I tried to do the best I could for my work people. I wasn't a bad person. I didn't think, I certainly wasn't a taskmaster, and I tried to give them all the help that I could. And indeed, I think I can say in comparison the vast majority of businesses of my time and people of my time and position, I think I treated my people extremely well. I wouldn't like you to think that I'm sort of satisfied myself, for me it who is. But looking back and remembering the dire poverty that there was, particularly in the built-up areas, in the big cities, in Leeds and Manchester and so on, I think really today, of course, people have much better opportunity. But this business of communication, I realize, of course, it could do a great deal of good, but I don't think you're ever going to break down the barriers that people have built up, and religious intolerance. And I think the task is so immense. You know, I don't know how many religions you've got, must be hundreds of them, I think. Everybody all sort of sticking to their guns.
Could you tell us something about your side of life?
Oh, I could. As a matter of fact, since I've been here, I've changed a lot of my views. But I suppose it is that one gets so adjusted to a new life with all its many interests and the many attractions that there are in all sorts of ways. But gradually, particularly if you've been unhappy as I was on earth, for various very good reasons, you're very glad to forget it all and settle here and take an interest in life. I don't see the sense when some of these people make a habit of coming back. Don't know what good it does them or anyone else. Of course, I suppose, like everything else, there are exceptions.
Mr. Watson, what was your actual reaction on passing over? Can you give us a description of that?
Six of relief.
How did you find yourself?
Sense of tremendous relief. My goodness me. I was so glad to get away from the earth and out of that body of mine and away from, well, some of the people that were only just waiting for me to die so that they could get my money. But I'm afraid they were all rather disappointed. I made sure of that.
How did you actually find yourself, Mr. Watson? What conditions did you find yourself?
Well, conditions?
Well, I mean, what sort of...
Well, I found myself over here. First thing I remember was my father coming to meet me. Funny thing was, I remember waking up, I suppose is the way you put it, in what appeared to be what it was, the garden. So I thought it was the garden of our own house. We had a magnificent garden. My father was a great gardener. I was very interested in that. And this place was so like it. And I remember I sitting on a seat and looking across the lawns to an ornamental lake which my father had built. And I remember waking up and seeing my father coming towards me with his hands outstretched. First, it didn't strike me as odd. I think I thought of it all in such a natural manner, as if it was the most natural thing. And I remember him sitting down beside me and congratulating me. For this struck me as odd, why I should be congratulated. I couldn't think what I'd done, what I'd achieved. And he wasn't a demonstrative man on earth. And he was telling me how happy he was that I'd come through and succeeded. And for the moment, I didn't understand what he was referring to. And then it suddenly dawned on me that this is all an unnatural situation. What was I doing on this seat? In this particular place, which was really some 40 years previously, possibly more, my youth, my early years, my formative years. We often went to the country during the summer months when business permitted, and in the winter too. And it was just as if I'd come down for a week or two in the country at my father's place, and it struck me as being so strange, because it was as if I could remember that particular moment that I had been much older, and that I was lying on the bed, and that I was, and had been for many months, suffering a great deal with my lungs and chest, having great difficulty with breathing. Here I was, as natural and as breathing as easily as I had done in the old days. And my father said, you know, you're now out of it all. It began to dawn on me that this was an unreal situation. What he meant was that I was out of the old life, and I couldn't help thinking to myself, well, I can't be dead, and yet everything seems to imply that some big change has taken place, because this is also familiar, and yet it's 40-50 years ago in my life. Then I thought to myself, well, how could it be this place, if it's a new life that I mean, if this is true, then I didn't see how my father's property could be over on this side of life. It would all be building, and he was saying to me, Bush, no, that we have still got the old house. And I thought this was so strange. He said, you know, this is an exact replica. I said, what do you mean exact replica? I said, of the old home. And I could see, of course, that it evidently was a replica, although to me it seemed identical. I thought it was the house, and I knew that it couldn't be. And he said, well, let us go in and see the others. I said, others, what others? And he said, oh, brother, and Simon. Simon was a young brother, by the way, who passed the infancy. And when he said Simon, it didn't mean a thing to me. I said, Simon, who produces Simon. He said, Simon's a brother. If you remember, baby brother died when you were about 3 or 4 years old. This is, I didn't remember any of this. Anyway, we went into the old house. It was exactly the same. Everything about it was the same. The same furniture, the same statues, the same mantel shelf. Everything was identical in the drawing room. The piano was there. And I could see, as it were, as if I were going back over 50 years, all perfectly reproduced. And there was my mother, looking so young, so very young, and I hardly realized at first that it was she, but it was she, but as she was when my mother and father presumably first met. And there was a tall, young fellow, I should think he looked about 17, 18, turned out to be this brother who died in infancy, puzzling. And then I remember asking my people, I said, well, how is it that you have this house? How did it come about? I said, I accept the fact that you say I'm dead and I realize something tremendous has happened. But I don't understand how it is that one should have one's own home reproduced. Who makes all the furniture? Who makes all the carpets and things? And how does all this come about? And my father said, well, this is something which is not easy to explain. But this is something which you have earned, which we have earned. And I thought to myself, well, I don't know that I've earned anything in particular. And I'm remembering my father, although he was in many respects a good man, at the same time he was a very strict man. Man, I suppose, merely a business which one had to be. But on earth, he was honest and just. And indeed he was a remarkable man in many ways, but I couldn't see the justification for all this, which seemed so remarkable because it was so identical with everything. My father said, well, of course, to some extent, one's condition, surroundings, one's life, if you like, is due to a great extent as to what you were yourself when on earth, your attitude of mind to others, your efforts on behalf of others, and to some extent the way in which you yourself have given yourself to others. And as he was saying this, I couldn't help but think, well, there may be something in this, he says so, and yet I couldn't see that my father, or for that matter myself, were particularly over-generous people. We were sensible, we helped people, it's true, but then we were particularly good to our work people. But even then, from what I gathered, that as you live, to some extent that must and does affect your way of life over here and what reception we have. So evidently we couldn't have been so bad. We've made for ourselves some preparation without our even realizing it. My father was very orthodox. I was not an orthodox man as far as religion was concerned, but my father was very strictly orthodox. But of course, I soon gathered that this orthodox outlook of religion had changed very much, and he was no longer thinking on the old lines. And it seems to me that I lived in a very natural, happy way for a time with my people. And I must say that in many respects our life was very like it had been in my youth, early years on earth. The only thing that I began to realize was that one seemed to have no need for food nor drink. At first this puzzled me. I thought I couldn't understand why I didn't have this desire for the natural things as far as my earth life was concerned. Indeed, I was very fond of food until my illness made it impossible to eat a great deal. And the idea of being fit and well and yet having no longer the desire for food and drink seemed in a sense unnatural. And for that matter, I never saw anything in the way of food. Although there were times when fruit was available, whether this was in some sort of way of thought, I think possibly it must have been. There were times when possibly one desired it or felt the desire for it. And then it was. Very seldom did one eat fruit or eat anything or desire to drink anything. The thing that interested and appealed to me most in those early formative years, if I can so use them over here, was the desire to continue studies which my father had stopped. When I was quite young, I showed a tendency towards music, and my mother encouraged me in this, and for about 2 to 3 years I was allowed to have lessons. But I think my father began to feel that this was becoming too important in my life, and I was sent away to a school, and music was dropped completely. And I'd always sort of in my later years regretted it, because I was a great one for going to the opera. I hardly ever missed a season at the Covent Garden, and many recitals that I used to go to great musicians of my day. Indeed, whatever time I could spare, I would give to music. And here I seem to quite naturally take up again my music. And I suppose it shouldn't have been to my surprise, but my father encouraged it and was delighted when I started again to seriously take an interest in music. And on one occasion, quite early on my being here, he said, "Well, would you like to go to a concert?" And so I was highly delighted, but at the same time surprised that he should suggest such a thing, because he had little or no time for the arts. He was very much towards business, never had any time for music and arts in particular. And I said, "Yes, of course I would," but I was a bit puzzled. He said, "Oh, well, we will go." So I was taken to my first concert in a vast, vast building, all so vast that I thought as I entered not only how magnificent and beautiful it was, but at the same time I couldn't help thinking to myself, the vastness of this place, surely if one sat in some parts of this place you wouldn't hear very much. But I was amazed and surprised at the acoustic properties and the clear-cut sound and the vast orchestra of what appeared to me at least, it was impossible to count, but several hundred musicians. And many of the instruments which they had were completely unfamiliar to me. And there were several pianos, not just one, as one would perhaps expect in a concert, perhaps two, one would have thought, but here there seemed to be at least 20 pianos. Goodness knows how many violins. Indeed, it was the vastest orchestra I'd ever seen, and the sound was well beyond description. But the extraordinary thing was, behind this great orchestra was what appeared to be a large wall, expansive wall. There were which had the appearance of being made of some sort of substance which seemed to give off all kind of hue in colouring. It was extraordinary. It seemed to scintillate, and the whole of this background seemed to change according to the music. Sometimes it would be suffused with the palest of colours, and occasionally there would be flashes of brilliant reds and blues and greens and colours indeed, some of which I couldn't even begin to describe. And it seemed as if all this colour had some connection with the music. According to the passage of the music that was being played, so this seemed to act as a, in such a way, to depict in colour the theme or idea of the music. And later, after this, of course, I went to many such concerts, and since then I've met many musicians, and I've always, as I've said, been interested in music, and I have met many great musicians, composers, and now I've become so immersed in music that perhaps that accounts for one of the reasons why I've never been drawn back to earth, and that I'm so happy in my life here, in music in particular, that I do not feel the need or the urge to come back. And I'm sure there must be thousands, millions like me, and I'm sure that perhaps for some it is a good thing to return. There are those who have specific, special work to do, who are probably in themselves the right people for coming back to communicate. But I never have felt the urge. I wouldn't like one to think that I'm so self-centered. I wouldn't like one to think that I was selfish. But I think there are people whose task it is to come back, to communicate, to do some special work, perhaps, for humanity. And there are others who perhaps, in their own way, do something of real consequence in their own environment. Because I do know that although I've not been in the habit of coming back to work, I do know that my efforts in music have been of some help to souls when we have gone into other plans, and given to them our music. And I'm sure it has been a great encouragement and a great help for them to raise themselves out of sometimes the darkness in which they find themselves. There are many, many different places. I wouldn't like you to think, as no doubt so many people think, that the earth is the only world. I think it is very wrong and very, shall we say, presumptuous people to assume that theirs is the only world. Yours is only one of many worlds, and there are many different stratas of intelligence and beings. In fact, one might say that to some extent the earth is one of the lesser progressed worlds. There are many worlds, and the earth world is, in comparison to some, very backward. Indeed, I would have thought that was very obvious to anyone with any intelligence. When you consider the age of your world and the generations of peoples that have inhabited it, that you are still, at this stage in your evolution, still talking and thinking about war. You are still indeed making war. You have civil war. You have all sorts of diseases brought about by man's foolishness and ignorance and stupidity. Indeed, I would go as far as to say that the earth world is perhaps one of the most unprogressed worlds in the atmosphere, in the solar system. I don't think people realize how little progress in some respects has been made. Though you've had great scientific progress, at the same time, although science may have benefited in some senses, It certainly hasn't brought the world together in mind and in spirit. They have brought you closer together materially, but that's not in itself necessarily such a good thing. If it were to combine the spiritual and the mental and the well-being of humanity, then that would be a different matter. But when I see, as I have seen just recently, into your world, the appalling mental conditions, the terrible attitude of mind of human beings, one towards the other, and how irrational you all are, and how self-centered you are, and how the whole world seems to be full of hatred and intolerance. It hasn't learnt hardly anything at all. You may flatter yourselves that you've progressed in some respects, but actually in some respects it's worse than it's been for centuries. There were little affairs, and I suppose in their time and day they were considered big affairs where peoples were at war. But now you think nothing of dropping a bomb, as you call it, and wiping out thousands of people at the same time. It really seems to me that evil has become even more powerful on a vaster scale. And yet you look upon yourselves as civilized human beings, and some of you look upon yourselves as Christians following the Christ. Others have their religious beliefs equally sincere, possibly, no doubt, but it seems to me that you're living in an age, in a time, in a world which has gone backwards rather than forwards. And I think until you start thinking more deeply about the things that really matter, the things of the spirit and of the mind, and allow these things to take precedence and become uppermost, paramount importance in your lives, the whole world's materialistic in its outlook and its approach. Even those who profess to be religious, most of them, so it seems to me, are acting and thinking in a hypocritical kind of way. As a matter of fact, the more I see of your world, the less I like it. And I certainly wouldn't want to come back and live there. And I must say that if I thought that I could give any real help or service in coming, I would. But frankly, I can't see what good I can do. And I really think that others on this side, whatever their intention of doing good, no matter how strong it may be, that they can hope to achieve very much. Because even those who profess to know about this subject seem to me to be very little further advanced than the rest, if in some senses as far advanced. Indeed, their responsibilities are greater. It doesn't seem to me that they do very much or achieve very much. I find it appalling that where there are people who have this knowledge of survival, of communication, that you don't get the spiritual and mental advancement that one would have expected. One therefore can only assume that in many instances the contacts and links that are made with souls on a very similar vibration and condition to you Earth people yourselves. Of course there are exceptions, no doubt, but it does seem to me a tragedy that if you have this opportunity of communication, if you don't make more good use of it, seems to me that you're achieving very little, and therefore can really see what good can hope to achieve by it, until at least more people understand and accept this and do something about it. It's no good saying, oh yes, I get into touch with this or that person and we have conversations and it's very wonderful and we know it's true about life after death. That will come quick enough. You'll die quick enough to find out for yourself. Unless you do something about it while you're there and you really put your back into it and really get down to doing something of a spiritual nature in such a material world as yours, all the effort seems to be pointless and in vain. Personally, I wouldn't want to come back regularly. I don't see there's any good or advantage in it for anyone. There certainly doesn't seem to have made very much difference. World seems to be worse when I left it. Can't stay any longer.
Oh,
I'm sorry. I suppose I haven't really done or achieved anything.
You have. You have.
I didn't think much good would come of it in the first place.
Oh,
really, quite honestly. I shan't be sorry. I shan't be sorry to get away from it. I pity you. Bless you. But I wouldn't want to go through your world again. I can't think of anything I dislike more. Well, goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.